Using a new interface, I'm just going to confirm that this actually is working. And yay, there we are. Okay. Okay, I've confirmed it's working. Sweet. We are streaming live to YouTube right now. So, hey, I'd like to welcome you to a new episode of the Banff Podcast. I am here with Craig Campbell of Nerdburger. How you doing, Craig?
Hi, I'm good. I'm not high. I didn't mean to say it that way. You asked two questions and you confused me.
Sorry.
Hello, and I am good. Thanks for having me.
And Craig is the head of Nerdburger Games. And Craig, you've got kind of a long and legendary resume in the game industry, correct?
Legendary. I've done a bunch of freelancing for D&D and a handful of other companies. And then, you know, several years ago, I started my own little imprint and I made a game and that one did well. And so then I decided, well, sure, I'll make another one. And then I'll make another one. And then I'll make supplements for one of them. And here we are.
Okay, cool. And that's been a very successful game. We gave you a Banffsy, which is the high watermark of success in superhero RPGs, lest we forget. So
it is. Thank you for that. I'm waiting for my trophy. It has not arrived yet. I have a place on the shelf all picked out.
We have paper cutout trophies. Sure. I thought we sent you one. I'll make sure I'll get on that.
No, there's really a paper cutout?
Yeah. We're fucking serious, man. Well, of course we have a paper cutout trophy. And speaking of fucking serious, Christopher McLaughlin, how you doing, sir?
I'm surprised to find that I'm synonymous with serious in any way, shape, or form.
Always a pleasure to have you on, sir. How is public education treating you there in Virginia?
Well, we're being micromanaged to death, and we're being pettifogged with silly, ridiculous duties. You know, about par for the course. Mm.
I feel you, Chris. I feel you. Nick, as I told you 2 weeks ago, I had to go to a two-day mandatory corporate cheerleading event where there were at least 1 hour of mandatory chanting. So I understand life is bad there, but I can feel at least a little bit of your pain. So
Okay. You know, have you ever been in a situation where you're in a seminar with 800 people and the presenter stops everything to come down and sit next to you and ask you why she isn't reaching you?
Okay, that's bad.
Yeah.
Maybe because you're making me really uncomfortable.
You know, and really, I've told my boss to tell these presenters, don't get within strangling range of me. It's just not going to end well.
That would be a trip to HR if I said that to anybody in my command chain, but I can understand your angst. Well, hey, we are here today to talk about pop culture and segue into some games. I was going to talk just quickly, a couple of things I've been really enjoying. Grant Morrison is writing Green Lantern right now. And I don't know if you guys have been reading it, but it's really, it's just been amazing. It's been a Green Lantern book I've been waiting decades to read. It's Grant Morrison at his best where he's lucid and characters matter, and it's you can get emotionally engaged in what he's talking about, but there's also a healthy dose of crazy shit like every other page. Just real. I mean, the current plot line has Green Lanterns from various multiverses because it's Grant Morrison fighting threats, and just really digging it. Can't say enough good things about it. And there was a comic book that just came out today from Dark Horse. Let me see. I was talking about this before. I had the title. Yeah, it's Tommy Gunn Wizards. Just came out from Dark Horse on Comixology today. And, you know, full disclosure, I did a comic book a few years back called Sorcerers and Speakeasies, an RPG, sorry. And, you know, similar idea, basically Elliot Ness in Chicago hunting down Capone, but Capone's dealing in magic. And Tommy Gunn Wizards, he's basically he's selling glamours at his speakeasies. And, you know, it's 1930s kind of pulp slash noir, so it's really more about tone than plot. And I, you know, it was only 22 pages so far, but I'm really enjoying it. It's written by Christian Ward and a lot of fun, so that's what I'm into right now. Craig, you had mentioned you just finished up The Boys on Amazon. How'd you like that?
I did. I watched the eight episode first season on Amazon. It's based on a comic. Are either of you familiar with it?
I read a few.
Familiar with it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was kind of one of these comics that it got started, I guess, with one of the ones an imprint, Wildstorm, an imprint of DC, and they did like six issues, and then it's really dark, and DC said, "Oh no, we didn't realize that's where this was going," and it got canceled, and then got picked up by Dynamite and made it to like 70 or something issues. And from like a decade ago. The Amazon did a first season, 8 episodes, you know, an hour ish long each. And just to recap for those people who aren't familiar, the basics of it is that this is a world with supers, but supers have been co-opted by corporations that basically sponsor them and that kind of support their lifestyle. And they have to go, they make appearances and they do special events and they do signings and they do all this sort of stuff. They're celebrities in every sense of the word that you can think of celebrity to be. Some of them make movies. To go along with all of this, the bulk of these supers that are tied up with these corporations are hedonistic and egotistical and corrupt, and they don't care. They play the part of superhero. You can't really call this a superhero show. It's a supers show because there aren't too many heroes in the story. It's really dark. Do you guys remember much from the comic about how dark it got? I'm curious about the comparisons between the two. Not that we'll get into a lot of detail.
A lot of very, very dark takes on classic DC characters, and a lot of overt sexual stuff. And I haven't watched the Amazon series, but a few issues I read of the Garth Ennis comic. Well, Garth Ennis, he hates superheroes, as a writer. So it was just black, black, black. Kind of, if you ever read the Hitman comic from way back in the day, kind of reminded me of that. Does that match up with what you saw on Amazon?
Pretty much, yeah. And now you're going to get a train here because I'm talking while it's happening. The hook of the story is that you've got a group of supers that are called the Seven. They are essentially the Justice League of this world. They're the most popular, most well-known. There's a Superman analog called the Homelander. There's a Wonder Woman analog called Queen Maeve. And Homelander is like incredibly egotistical. Queen Maeve is just completely jaded and burned out at being a superhero. You're kind of seeing it within the Seven as from the point of view of Starlight. What was her name? Starlight. She's the point of view character for the supers. She's like this good down home, like pardon the phrase, starry eyed girl from a small town who just wants to do good. And she becomes the newest member of the Seven, and she gets all of her illusions shattered pretty quickly the moment she joins up with the group and becomes part of the corporate machine and starts getting treated terribly by some of the members. You know how TV shows and movies, they have, when you see them on TV, they have the two-letter ratings, at least in the U.S. They have, AC for adult content and GV, graphic violence, and so forth. They've got a bunch of those. There's 6 of them total. And hello. there's 6 of them total. And the first episode of the show has all 6 at the front. Including rape. So be aware if that's a hot button for you, that it's not graphically represented, but it's there. It's clearly rape that happens right away in the first. And there's an incredibly violent scene. And then on the flip side, there's characters who are basically trying to expose the supers for being as horrible as they are. And the leader of that group, Billy Butcher, has a vendetta against Homelander and the disappearance regarding the disappearance of his wife. She's kidnapped or disappeared or maybe dead or not sure. And it gets really, really dark really fast and just stays dark. But it got renewed for a second season. Which is good because the first season leaves a lot of threads hanging. So I'm curious as to how far they're going to go with it, given that it was a relatively short run comic. If they're going to start to expand and do more of their own stuff and just kind of build the universe, or if they're going to kind of tell the story that the comic tells.
Yeah. I think with streaming, they're not saying if they kind of aim for like 2 to 3 season runs. I think I know a lot of Amazon shows seem to just go about that long. Their Tick series was just 2 seasons. I really wish there'd been some more of that, 'cause I was enjoying it, but it wasn't like it wasn't a laugh a minute like you expect the tick to be. They kind of mix in a lot of pathos, so I could probably turn people off. But yeah, Garth Ennis had written Hitman maybe 10 years before The Boys, but it was a hitman who specialized in killing superheroes. And he lived in Gotham. And I remember during the No Man's Land plotline, he actually just stayed in his old neighborhood and killed all the vampires who, for some reason, were showing up in Gotham.
And, like you do.
Like you do. It's the same kind of tone. Garth Ennis really doesn't seem to like the genre of superheroes. Maybe, Chris, maybe you have an opinion on that. But most everything I've seen him write, from Hitman to The Boys to a few, I love his war comics, but his superhero stuff. I read a filler issue of The Boys that was basically a hard, mean satire of Legion of Superheroes. He had them like in a group home for developmentally challenged supers who just patrolled the neighborhood during broad daylight. And very, very unkind takes on Bouncing Boy and a few others. Like I say, I enjoy his work, but he's got one very specific take on superheroes, and he just never seems to deviate from it. But I hear it's a good show. So
yeah, they are definitely not kind to their version of the Superman and Aquaman and Wonder Woman, and there's a few others. There's a Flash, variant, the Speedster, who is absolutely obsessed with remaining the fastest man. And will do absolutely whatever it takes to remain, to keep that title. It gets really terrible, and it stays pretty dark the whole time. But it's well done, and it's really well put together. The episodes, like each episode ends with a good, not a cliffhanger, but with a good hook to like make you want to watch the next one. It's just, you have to be prepared that, it's going to hit on pretty graphic violence and some pretty morbid, terrible sexual situations. You're muted.
Hello?
Yep.
Am I?
No, that was me. Sorry.
Oh, you? Okay.
We were going to talk about superheroes and kind of like the superhero. Well, you have your kind of Kickstarter in 2 weeks called Capers Covert.
Yeah.
Which is an homage to 1960s, 70s super spy movies, but with superpowers mixed in.
Right.
And I wanted to mention, Chris, I want to talk about the book that we did last year, The Summit, which was an homage to the Rat Pack.
Yes.
But done as superheroes. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
I was asked by another game company to come up with the idea of an international super team, and based around the United Nations. And my original take was, we all have these preconceptions of the United Nations as being, good to the point of ineffectual, I guess, unless you're in more right-wing circles where you're more into like the gang rapes they've supposedly committed in Africa. But everybody seems to have like these built baked in political notions of the UN, either that they're ineffectual, they're terrible, and not really anything that I consider to be fun from a gaming perspective. But I just started thinking about, wouldn't it be funny if like that was just a public front? And that, like the UN actually had like a really effective arm that actually did what it was supposed to. But, it's so good, they kind of have to keep it at least somewhat under wraps. So I got the idea of like making this like the UN team that nobody expected, that you would never expect. And so I'd had this idea kicking around my head literally for 15 years about I'd read an article in Film Facts magazine where a guy was doing a biography of the Rat Pack. And there's this one line in it where he refers to the Rat Pack as the Alcoholic Justice League of America. And that lit a fire in my brain of like, wow. Like, doing like a 60s era Justice League type riff that would have like that Rat Pack swagger and attitude. Because At a certain point in the 60s, if you got superpowers, you would probably wind up like the Rat Pack. You would probably be doing great things, but also indulging your own tendencies, and people would, you know, salute that. You know, people would think it was cool that, you know, you punched that guy because he wrote something about you. And I tried for years to get it launched as a project that would be true to its 60s native era, but yeah, had no takers. So I thought, well, you know, this may be your one chance to do, you know, this team with Rat Pack swagger. And you know, when it got to time to do it, I realized that, you know, as a UN team now, it's got to be more diverse. And, you know, for its time, the Rat Pack was fairly diverse. I'm thinking, well, you know, in a way, this is continuing together the spirit of that multiracial, multi-religious group. And I made it all the more so. And, you know, I just had fun trying to come up with like people that had never really had a superhero. And not to toot my own horn, but when it clicked to do, okay, he's a Quebecois, so but he's a Haitian immigrant. So he's a Haitian Quebecois Canadian. And on down through, you know, the beta, putting a beta Israeli in it. I was really, 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 really happy with it. But yeah, the manuscript got rejected for being insufficiently woke. So I wrote a 5-page response, say, asking for clarification on certain points, and I was basically handed an ultimatum. You know, either you rewrite this entirely, or I will. So I just said, keep it. Just don't put my name on it. But they were very good. They let me keep the manuscript. And I didn't know what to do with it until Mike, God bless him, you know, he like convinced me that like I have fans and like people would pay just for a book just because my name was on it. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, this was originally only intended to be part of a book. And then lo and behold, our Kickstarter, we did over $1,600, and that's like $1,599 more than I was expecting to take in. And I was so, so thrilled with that. So apparently a lot of people got what I was doing. And really, you know, the thing that really blew me away was, you know, not only the monetary response we got, the praise we got for the diversity that we showed in the characters, you know, that did my heart good. And if you were to accuse me of some receipt cashing, I probably couldn't deny that. But, you know, just the industry people who read it, you know, we were so blessed to have Storm Cook do the art on it. And to this day, I just can't believe how the hell did we get Storm Cook? I mean, we gave him money and stuff, but plenty of people want to give him money.
But, you know, I have pictures of Storm. It's a long story.
Yeah, but, you know, but when he came back and said, I wanted to be a part of this project because of the quality of the writing, I just think this is a really neat book. Oh my gosh. You know, I mean, I spent a whole month after the manuscript was rejected thinking like, yeah, well, the rest of my career, I'm going to be opening up. I'm going to do them van shows with Burt Ward, you know? Yeah. Come meet the guy who used to be Robin and the guy that did Eminem Noir. Yeah. They'll be happy. They'll pay you for an autograph. They'll pay you if you let them autograph something.
I kind of want to see an RPG now called Van Show with Burt Ward. But you know, one of the great things. Do you guys hear that by any chance?
Yes. Okay, yes. Yes.
That's my 6-year-old. He's as you probably saw him earlier. Hey, but did the screen share work? Did you guys see the cover?
I saw everything moving. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. The great thing about Kickstarter, like we were talking about, is that it gives you some validation right away. And Craig. Yeah. As we were talking about pre-show, you've done, I want to say, you said 4 Kickstarters?
I've done 5. 4 of them are fulfilled. 1 of them is very close to being fulfilled.
Now, all those weren't capers, right? Just like the last 2 or 3?
Right. There was Murders and Acquisitions. That was the first game that just kind of, you know, I did well enough to get made. And that's about as well as that did. It was my, you know, dipping my toe in the water. And then I did Capers, which did quite well. And then Die Laughing, which is another game, which is like a short play, kind of a smaller scale game. And then I did a supplement called Capers Noir. And now there's a supplement, you know, I've got basically plans for 2 more supplements that'll be about the size of Capers Noir. And then there was like a little Kickstarter, and that was like just a little tiny thing. That was an experiment, really.
Oh, that was your 4-day Kickstarter, right?
That was the 4 games in 4 days. Yeah, it was a 4-day long Kickstarter. Okay. To make 4 mini games and put them in a nice little book and give them some artwork.
Man, I love the idea of a 40 Kickstarter. Because 30 days just about kills me.
Yeah, I've already dedicated myself the supplements. These are, I'm going to do 3 weeks tops. That's it. I'm not going to 4 weeks for a supplement. 3 weeks is good enough. It'll leave a little money on the table when I do it, but that's fine because it just makes for a long month. That middle section that everything where everything just drags.
Yeah. The valley in the middle. It's it's depressing. But
granted, I've only done the one. But, you know, even the days when it would go up by $3, I felt the love, you know, after having my month of feeling like a has-been, that $3, I mean, that was just balm to my soul. I enjoyed the 30 days. Sorry.
That's okay. Everybody, there's people out there that do 45 and 60 days.
Yeah, we're close to fulfilling the summit has been like 98% fulfilled. We're just waiting for Jason Walters from Hero Games to finish up like 2 stat blocks, and we can get the Hero System version out. So close. But let's talk about Capers Covert. As we mentioned, we're going for that very specific 60s, 70s super spy kind of Ocean's 11 Mission Impossible vibe, but with superpowers.
Right.
So it kind of ties in nicely with Chris's project, which was the Rat Pack, but superpowers. And I hope you guys can see, I screen shared this snapshot of your cover. And this, we should name check the artist again, because this is beautiful work she did here.
The artist is Beth Varney. She did a little bit of work for me on Murders and Acquisitions to start with, and I really liked your style. And so when I did Capers, I asked her, would you be interested in doing the whole thing, the entire book, every single piece? She said yes. And then partway through the Capers Kickstarter, I realized that, hey, there's actually people who want to see supplements. And then so I said, well, would you like to do a whole bunch of supplements too? And she did. So she's working on her third, large Capers project, and she just keeps getting better. Yeah, this cover is going to be, it's pretty slick. It's going to look a lot like the other Capers covers where it's got like a border to it. Each one's a different color. This one's got like a green border and all the artwork in the center here is like orange and red and everything. So it's, the color scheme really pops. It's really nice.
Cool. And, I have probably been amiss here. There might be some listeners. I know we've had you on at least once, maybe twice before. Could you give us the quick elevator pitch about Capers just so we know where you're coming from?
Sure. Well, Capers is it's a super-powered RPG set in the Roaring Twenties. So it's basically, Al Capone, Lucky Luciano type era, but there are superpowers. And so you're playing either a criminal or a member of law enforcement with such powers as a criminal attempting to build your prohibition gang land empire, or as a law enforcement official trying to bring those criminals down with not enough firepower and manpower. And the game itself uses a playing card mechanic rather than dice. And the mechanic is sort of a press your luck, multi-card flip gambling mechanic that has been pretty well received. People seem to really like it. And so I built, from there I decided, okay, well, if I'm going to do a supplement, like the supplement needs to have obviously more stuff for players and GM, but what else can I do with it? And with Capers Noir, I progressed the timeline of the world to the 40s and made it a kind of a noir setting. There's also kind of a horror side to things. There's ghosts and things and things that go bump in the night, along with the noir mystery side, along with investigation rules and all that sort of thing. And now with this one, we're pushing it 20 more years to the 60s to specifically kind of classic James Bond style, Mission Impossible style, super spies and super villains. So that each time it's always about criminals and cops. It's just like different types of criminals and cops in different genre settings. And so that's what Capers Covert is going to be all about. So it's got gadgets and rules for vehicle chases.
We should probably mention
and a whole bunch of Las Vegas information.
Vegas, baby, Vegas. We should mention Nerdburger Games has a website. There's an SRD available for Capers if people want to produce their own content, and you have an active Discord server for Nerdburger as well.
I do. I have like a little community of people that like my games and like to talk to me and talk about the games and other stuff too. Which is was a little surprising. I have a friend who convinced me to do it to start the Discord, and it turned out to work out really nicely. Website doesn't get as much love, but there's still plenty. There is plenty of good information there. But Discord's
Websites are really 2008, man. It's Discord's where it's all at these days. Which is sad, but I actually hear people say that. So, I've got a Discord for the BAMF podcast people can check out, and I drop in there periodically. Sometimes I love Discord, and sometimes it gets a little flaky on me. Like right now, my password works on the web GUI, but not on the application itself. That's a tedious troubleshooting thing. So you guys are launching this Kickstarter on September 17th, and you said you were running for just 3 weeks?
That's the plan.
Okay, cool. I like that idea. And people can check that out. And obviously, if they want to check out Capers or Caper, I know Capers is up on DriveThru. Is Capers Noir up there yet?
Noir is up there as well. And you'll be able to get the core game. You'll be able to get Noir. You'll be able to get all sorts of other Caper stuff as part of the Kickstarter, too. There's like different bundlings of stuff for different backer levels and add-ons and all that sort of thing. So like when I did Noir, I ended up getting quite a few people who they found Capers for the first time. So they got the core book and Noir.
Yeah, that's kind of the beautiful thing about, when you're marketing things in a line is someone gets book five and they're like, oh, hey, I want to get the previous four. It moves the back catalog, as they say.
Yep.
It occurs to me, you, sir, are a serious game design guy, right?
Who are you talking to? You, sir.
I was
pointed at the picture on the screen. Well done, sir.
Exactly. So I tend to be more of a freeform guy myself, and I figured the tone of the game is going to be set by the GM at the table and how they evoke things. But there's a lot of people who argue with that and say the way you evoke a tone for a specific game is all in the rule set, and you can bake in certain genre emulation. Do you take that approach with Capers? You try to tweak the rules for Capers Noir versus Capers Covert to sort of emulate the fiction you're going for?
It's there to an extent with the playing card mechanic, which I think kind of fits the era nicely for the 20s with, because there's plenty of casinos, gambling dens, so forth. So it's a product of that era. And obviously we just carry that system forward to the other one. So with Noir, like the playing card thing and the mechanics that are in Noir aren't specifically filling that, although in Noir there is a thing called the shade track where if you're kind of in the midst of all this darkness and dreariness and cynicism, your soul can kind of get weighed down, and there's a track that that affects your character, and you gain points in that, it affects your character. And then of course when we get to Capers Covert, there's the classic James Bond playing Baccarat. Not that I know how to play that, so in the book the illustration is of people playing poker. But it's like the primary backdrop for the game is going to be set in Vegas, so that there's plenty of casinos. And again, it kind of fills like the idea that you're making checks that are kind of gambling, because these characters are sort of gambling with their lives. They're, criminals are living outside the law. And so every day is a gamble. So I marry like the mechanics and some of that stuff with like what I want the game to be kind of like a bit. But there's other stuff that I've done with game design where it's just like, oh, it's just a dice system that, does the job.
Fair enough. So if you had to pick a James Bond from that era, are you going with Roger Moore or Sean Connery?
Well, Sean Connery.
That's the right answer. Chris, what do you say?
To me, there is Sean Connery and then there is Void.
Not a fan of Daniel Craig then.
I think mainly he's been ill-served by his scripts. I mean, Casino Royale was rightly lauded as the best Bond in years. But it's like immediately after that, it's like nobody had any clue what to do after that. I mean, especially like the whole thing where they actually get the rights to Spectre and Blofeld back. And they like copy Austin Powers and try to make them like retroactively family. And it's just no. No, 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 just no, no.
From a meta point of view, looking at some of these franchises that have been around for decades and the big corporations trying to, milk, one more film, two more films out of it. I was kind of relieved to see they were going a whole different direction on casting James Bond. It's almost like they just said, we need to, wipe clean and start over. On the other hand, part of me wonders maybe they'd just be better off better served just putting that one away for a while, you know, letting it have a few, you know, decades on the shelf and then bringing it back, you know, for a fresh take in a few years.
We are living in an age where the most popular fruit in the world is member berries. We can't let anything go. I clicked on the comic book resources the other day, and their headline was, "Is the plot of the next Star Wars movie involving around another Death Star?" And I said, "Of course it is, because people don't want to see any other Star Wars plot. They just want to keep blowing up the damn Death Stars. You give them anything even the slightest bit different, and they hate you. Ask Rian Johnson."
I was about to point at Chris's icon on the screen, and I realized I made that faux pas earlier with Craig, so I'm not going to do that. But Chris, I appreciate you posting the Donnie and Marie Star Wars special the other day.
That was actually my good friend Tony Cranfield who wanted to bring that to my attention, and that was a miracle of the internet moment, because I've been carrying that thing around inside my head for like 35 years, and I just had to go to YouTube to see, did I just dream all that? Did I really ever once see Red Fox as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Paul Lind as Grand Moff Tarkin?
Oh, and good Lord. Where is this? Where can I have this
YouTube
forever?
It's on YouTube. It's the Donnie and Marie Star Wars special.
Wow.
And really, I was impressed by, you know, like I have probably, there are probably people that I was deeply in love with once who have forgotten their name. But like after 35 years, I still remember precisely how drunk Kris Kristofferson was visibly on camera.
Christopherson as Han Solo.
Yeah, and knowing and being eight and recognizing that man's drunk.
Hey, I'll put that link in our show notes. And Craig, I just sent it to you on Twitter because I know we're having trouble with the Streamlabs.
And dig up, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, I'm sure you've probably talked about it at one point or another, but I see like a Star Wars-ish T-shirt on you there, Mike. The Star Wars holiday special, which now you, of course, with YouTube, you can find that floating around too, and that's got a visibly high Carrie Fisher in it.
Well, yes, it does.
Really high.
But really, if you haven't seen the riff tracks of the Star Wars Holiday Special, you're really missing something. That is what we call a target-rich environment. Mike, Kevin, and Bill do a super job working their way through that.
Yeah, it's I got a weird relationship with Star Wars because I loved it, you know, deeply when I was a kid. First movie I ever saw was Star Wars. I didn't know.
Isn't it very telling that people love the people that really love Star Wars? You know, I hadn't seen any other movies when I first saw it. You know, it's like
I was 5 years old. I lived next to a cornfield. We had to drive 2 hours to get to a movie theater.
I'm with you, man.
And I loved the first two movies, and I was disappointed in Jedi, and except for Rogue One and most of Solo, I've been disappointed in most Star Wars movies. And I'm not bitter about it. I'm just kind of like, maybe it's not for me anymore. But damn, people are pissed. Always pissed about Star Wars. I got things in my real life that I should be angrier about. And I look at people's, you know, fury about Star Wars, and I'm like, damn, motherfucker. How can you summon that passion about? But yeah, people are. So
The ultimate Star Wars story remains the really annoying fan that followed Sir Alec Guinness around and finally cornered him and said, "Will you sign this picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi? I have seen that movie over 600 times." And Guinness agreed to give him an autograph on the condition that he would never watch the movie again. Jeez.
There are people who unironically follow, you know, Jedi as a religious choice. And I mean, not saying it's not valid. I mean, people make up their own religions all the time. Hi, Mormons. How you doing? But, you know, I pissed off someone in Utah just now. Sorry. But, you know,
I got Mormon friends, man. I mean, it's not my religion, but I mean, I have a lot of respect for Mormons than I do some man child in his basement with a lightsaber, man. That's out of bounds, man. You shouldn't have done that.
Do you know about John Smith?
I do, but I got the thing is I don't hold a whole religion accountable by the actions of one of its members.
Have you seen the Book of Mormon?
I have a copy of it, in fact.
Okay. No, I meant the musical.
Well, yeah, and I keep thinking how that gets called daring. I'm like, well, if you guys really want to do something daring, pick on a religion that isn't Christianity. But that's the religion that it's acceptable to punch around in our culture.
Mormons don't have suicide bombers, Chris. All right, sorry. You know what? Let's stop with the religion. That was a bad place to go. I apologize. Let's get back to cool role playing games. Capers, starting in September. We'll put up a link on our social media when that goes live. Craig, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming out.
Sure.
Do you have any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
Oh, it's just one of the things I've been throwing out there to people a lot lately, because I get asked the question, or people, you know, kind of approach, like, you know, how did you do this? How did you make a game of your own? And, you know, just saying to anybody, if you've got an idea, sit down, try writing it up, try putting, like, just bullet point stuff down, sitting down with some dice and some friends and trying it out and giving it a shot. Cause I'm a big believer in the idea that there is no such thing as too many games. And if you have an idea, there's an audience out there. There are people out there right now who are waiting desperately for you to make that thing because they don't know they want it yet. But when they see it, they'll be on board. So give it a shot. Try to make something. First game might suck. Make the second one. The second one will be better.
That's a good sentiment. I agree completely. You know, I don't know if you check out this itch.io. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of indie RPGs on there right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting things happening there, especially if you check out the game jams where people just throw an idea up and a bunch of people just throw together in a relatively short period of time, like really interesting takes on whatever the theme is for that jam.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. So yeah, check that out. Craig, appreciate you. Chris, do you have any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
I think I said it all.
All right, cool. Well, hey, listeners, thanks for checking us out here in the Banff Podcast. I apologize for my regrettable segue into religion. We'll bring it up again, and we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Yeah, 10 Our Fathers and 5 Hail Marys.
Thank you, sir. And now we are off the air.